Hello and welcome to episode 79 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grundislav, and with me, as always...
Nobody cares.
No.
Hello.
Are you grumpy and sad because we have
a podcast? No, I'm not grumpy and sad. I'm just like, they've forgotten who we are. They don't care. It's been too long.
It has been too long. So I guess we should start off by apologizing to our listeners for going so long
for,
without
for the content that you're about to hear.
Well,
if the lack of quality.
If that's the case, I'd like to retroactively apologize for the past 78 episodes.
We got a lot of sins to make up for.
But yeah, one thing or another, I was away for a bit. You've been busy with stuff. I've been busy with stuff. But yeah, we're back and we're podcasting.
Hello.
That's all that matters. Hi. Yeah, so let's get right into it. How have you been?
What have you been up to?
What has caused you to not be around for podcasting? What has caused you to abandon our dear fans and cow?
I just didn't like them anymore. I was just like, whatever. I've just gotten really apathetic in the last month. My internet's been pretty bad as well, so it's not just been like, we didn't want to do it, but I literally just couldn't hold down a Skype call. When it's rainy, this is how stupid my internet is, when it's rainy, and I actually talk to like a bloke from like, a bloke, how Australian am I?
I was going to let it slide, but you called attention to it.
Yeah, from a fellow from a telecommunications company about the thing, he was like, rain will totally do that out here. So yeah, when it's raining, my internet's really bad, and it's been really rainy the last 2 months, so it's been a frustrating endeavor.
But at the same time, it's a good thing, because rain is usually like, it doesn't rain where
wonderful.
You live. Yeah, so it's good that it's been raining.
Yeah,
so I'm sure
you can download lots of fun games and do podcasts. So,
sure our listeners will be understanding and hope and glad that you've gotten nice rain.
And if not, they can just suck it up, because what choice do they have?
Exactly.
How have you been, and how was Mittens this year?
Oh yeah, I've been good. I went to Mittens. That was one of the things that kept me away. I went to Mittens a couple of weeks ago in New Orleans, which was lovely, if not incredibly hot and humid. But it was a good time. We stayed at a nice little house near the Garden District, which, if any of you have been to New Orleans, is a lovely little neighborhood. And we went into there in video games, but never in life. Yeah, well, it's surprisingly accurate. And we went into the French Quarter a couple of times.
Well, which video game are you talking about? Because you're probably talking about Gabriel Knight, but I'm talking about Tony Hawk's Underground 2.
I know you're talking about Tony Hawk's Underground 2, and
can comment on the accuracy of having not played it.
Well, true. But then again, when we went to Bondi, you commented on how accurate it seemed from your Tony Hawk experience. So
that's the only thing I know about any city is what I've seen.
Yeah,
I know
pretty much.
I saw a thing where I was like, I saw Love Park in Philadelphia. Mm. And I was like, oh, dude, yeah, I've totally skated there.
You goddamn
I know the Liberty Bell.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, I'm sure you
so,
yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. You're the authority on all Liberty Bell related things, just because you've done you've grinded on
it.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's my experience with it.
Oh dear. But yeah, aside from that, just been working. Got Shardlight fully playable from start to finish, which had been my goal for like the past several months. So that's good.
Yeah, you plan to have that done by the.
Yeah, I wanted to have it done by like.
But anyway, we're here now.
I wanted to have it done by the end of May.
What have you been doing with your life? Jesus.
Well, I've been working. We had to do edits and stuff. It's been very busy.
I was there.
More than anyway. Yeah, you were there. You know what's going on. Don't act like you don't know. Anyway, it's been good. We've been auditioning people for voice acting, so that's moving along. So I'm happy where the project is right now. So yes. Aside from that, yeah, not really too much to report. Let's move on to... Actually, before we move on to what we've been playing, I made a list. I've actually prepared myself for the first time ever doing this podcast.
Yeah, because for once you've actually played games, usually you're like, oh yeah, I've played some...
No, I'm not just... I'm not just talking about the games.
That was a Batman.
No, I'm talking... Well, I did play three games that were a Batman, actually, but no...
How much Batman do you need in your life? He's a man that dresses as a bat and chases a clown and a penguin. This is like the gripping plot that you follow through films and things. He's a man that dresses up as a bat and chases a clown and a penguin.
Yeah. Anyway, I have
sounds
a couple...
Sounds like a shit webcomic.
I have some housekeeping issues to get through.
Jesus.
I know, we're like a real podcast now with housekeeping issues. Isn't that crazy? So first of all, I want to say thank you to Amirat Akago. I don't know how to pronounce his name.
I think it's Amirat Akago.
He made us several weeks ago a very lovely fan theme song. Yeah, a fan theme song, which I'm going to put at the end of our podcast to be our outro song today. It's very lovely. Thank you very much for that.
And sorry for mispronouncing your name. But... See, when I first encountered him, he was Admiral Akiga, and I just thought it was like something made up. Like I was like, oh, it's a reference to some film I've never seen because I don't watch films much. And I was like, oh, that's a fun name. And I was like, oh, it's a dude's name.
Yeah.
Oh, no. That's easier to remember. But now I have to learn that his first name isn't actually Admiral. Imagine if your mother called you Admiral. That would actually be pretty awesome.
I remember I was like buying plane tickets one time and they had a little drop down menu for what your title was, you know, like Mr. or Ms. or Mrs. or whatever. And amongst the choices were Doctor and Captain. And I wanted to be Captain, but I figured they probably would catch on to me and throw me off.
Do you know what I want mine to be?
What?
If I could choose, I would just have the...
The Ben Chandler?
The Ben Chandler is on the plane.
They also
that's
had a...
That's unique, because that sounds way more important than anything else. You can be like, true. President Ben Chandler. I'm like, oh yeah, but the Ben Chandler, he's the only one. He's the only one of any note that anyone cares about. That's pretty... That's what I want.
Well, there is that senator in Kentucky, but...
No one cares about Ben Chandler. That's not even his name. That's his middle name, and he's using it as his first name. You thieving
Kentucky?
Anyway,
oh, yeah, so also, we got a corrections email. Actually, we got two correction emails. And this just goes to show you how long it's been since we podcasted.
I just want
to
say this. If you're going to point out every time one of us says something wrong, you're going to spend a fucking long time writing emails, my friends.
That's true.
That's a futile task.
It is. But anyway, we got an email from our friend Brian Devins, who does the Square Waves FM podcast.
Hi, Brian.
Hello, Brian. Both you and I have been on. And just to show you how long it's been since we podcasted, this email is dated July 14th. I should mention that it's currently September 4th. So so he sends an email as a podcast correction. Ha ha! You should read that all piratey. I guess I did. I'm not sure I can remember...
That reminds me of a joke.
I
told my dad that and he laughed so much. Mom just went...
Is it the one I think it is? Because I told that joke and I laughed so much.
I heard it the day before. I was like, great timing, Gonzalez.
No, I told it to someone else and I laughed and they didn't and it was great. Anyway, so, Brian's email says, I'm not sure I can remember anyone writing into your podcast with a correction, so it is with malevolent glee that I serve one up to you. In show number 76, that was 3 episodes ago, Francisco mentions
2009.
Yeah, probably. In shows number 76, Francisco mentions that Bubble Bobble is endless and therefore sucks. I actually have 3 corrections related to this conversation. Number one,
one of them that it doesn't suck.
Number one, Bubble Bobble does not suck. Anyone who says it sucks is in fact the sucker. So I guess
you hate life and you are without joy.
That makes me a big old sucker.
Yeah.
Number two, the game is not endless. It has 99 rounds, which end with a big boss that you have to kill with lightning bolts in bubbles. Killing the boss
99 red bubbles?
Yeah. Or 99 problems and a boss ain't one of them. Killing the boss in one player mode gives you the sad ending where one girlfriend is saved but not the other. Killing the boss with two players rescues both girlfriends but then gives you a code for super mode. You must then play all 99 levels all over again and beat the same final boss. If you do it with one player, you get the lonely ending, which tells you to value the wonder of friendship or some shit. If you finish super mode with two players, your dragon dudes turn into human boys and you're reunited with your parents. Well, that's nice.
That's Monkey Island 2.
That is Monkey... It is.
That's literally what it is.
Yes, and number three.
Spoilers for anybody that somehow hasn't played in Monkey Island by now. Jesus.
If anyone, yeah. What are you doing listening to this podcast if you haven't?
Yeah, that's true. Anyway, thank you, Brian, for the
correction. Wait, that's I'm not finished. There's more.
Jesus, how many things did you get wrong in?
No, here's one that I got right. Number three, the only thing that does suck about Bubble Bobble is that horrible 20-second song that loops over and over for all 198 levels, though the bosses get their own song. However, at least this beautiful thing came from it. And then he includes a YouTube link, which I haven't followed, but let me see. Oh, Brental Floss. Brental Floss apparently added lyrics to Bubble Bobble. I'm not going to watch this because Brental Floss's lyrics are very catchy. Anyway,
But if you're listening, you can go and look it up on YouTube.com.
Yeah, go look up Brental Floss Bubble Bobble. And he says, P.S., the upper memory block fans are known as blockers, and on Square Waves FM, the hosts have been called squares. So does that make you guys tools, or am I the tool? And I think it's been pretty well established that we are the Blue Cup tools, we are the tools.
He you also can be a tool if you want, you're a listener, and you feel like tooling off or tooling around.
I guess.
Tim Allen's Tool Time. Don't watch that.
Please don't. He also
sitcoms are the spawn of Satan, except for The Addams Family, which is the most perfect television show ever created.
Brian also sent a screenshot of the happy ending wherein the kids are reunited with their parents, and it says it has. I'll describe the screen to you since you can't see it. On either side, in big pink balloon-like letters, it says "Happy End" with two exclamation marks. Then,
it sounds like something you pay for in a massage parlor.
Yes, it does. Then there's three sets of people. There's presumably the little dragon boys on either side, one in green and one in blue, and they're reunited with their girlfriends, and they have little they're embracing, and they have little golden hearts above them. And then in the middle there's two larger people that are hugging as well, and they have big pink shoes. And it's a lady with blonde hair and a man with brown hair, and they have a big heart over them. And in fact, the heart is so big that it actually cuts off at the top of the screenshot. And
that's so sweet.
Yeah, and she's wearing a shirt that says in bright yellow letters, "Ma'am," and he's wearing a shirt that says "Papa" in bright yellow letters. And underneath
That clears up the confusion.
Yes, he has a mustache, too, just in case it was unclear.
Well, he's the papa. That's what they have.
He is, yes. And underneath this, they're in front of a big star field, and underneath this it says in big red text, "Congratulations!" exclamation mark. And then underneath that, in white text, it says, "You could help your father and mother. They were controlled, with one L, by someone. Who is he? No one knows of it. The truth is in the darkness forever." ..
I've got the darkness for PlayStation 3. I didn't see anything about Bubble Bobble in there.
Yeah, here's a link to the screenshot for you, just in case you were curious to...
I want to see these big pink shoes.
Yeah,
I care about pink shoes.
If my visual description wasn't enough for you, then you can see it for yourself.
Have a look. I got a 403.
Oh, what? That's crap.
That's the backwards of my number. That's not what I wanted.
Well, you know what? I'm just going to save it to my desktop, and I'm going to send it to you on Skype, so you can...
That's okay.
You can enter the... No, I insist. I insist.
You need me to view the pink shoes.
Well, I mean, you wanted...
Is this from the NES version?
It looks to be, yes.
Because you picked on me, you're like, oh, you kind of played Bubble Bobble. You never had an NES. It was an arcade game.
Okay. Well, maybe this is for the
arcade. Oh, wow, their shoes are very pink.
Ah, yeah, they are. I told you.
Mum, Papa.
Ma'am and Papa.
Ma'am
anyway.
Papa. Yes, ma'am. And Papa. Oh, man, they're so cute with their little girlfriends.
Yeah, they are.
That's the most adorable thing I've seen this week.
We also got a correction from Trolls, but I don't remember where he sent it. I think he tweeted it at us, and I can't be bothered to
go look. He probably just screamed it into the ether.
Oh, no, I remember now. He screamed at me on Twitter saying that it's impossible to shape the outcome of Blade Runner because it's randomized. But I maintain that it is possible to at least shape the outcome of whether you're a replicant or not in Blade Runner. And that's based entirely on your actions. And I don't care if it's random or not. Yes, there are characters that are randomly replicants, but they really have nothing to do with you if you are or not. You make that choice yourself, subconsciously or consciously. I know I've played Blade Runner several times.
Like in life.
Yeah, I've gone and I've played Blade Runner, and I've purposefully made the story turn out so that the main characters are replicants. So, yeah.
Do you want to know something about random?
You know what I'm going to say is I love that I'm so mature that I take a correction and I debunk it and I go, yeah, at the end. That just goes to show you my level of maturity. Anyway, sorry, you were going to say...
About random stuff, I must have, like, you know, in Sam and Max Hit the Road, there's the puzzle with the colored doors and you've got to set the lights on the magnets under the thing to the right color.
Sure, I hate that puzzle.
I must have always got green, because I was like, I was playing through it with Kelsey a while ago and I was like, oh yeah, it's the green door. And like, there was no green door. I was like, what the hell? It's always been the green door. And yeah, like, so no, I must have got it. I didn't even realize it was random. I must have had the green door every time randomly. Wow. By luck. And then this time it was the orange door. And I was like, oh, wow.
I think it was the white door for me last time I played it.
Mm, that changed my experience of set. I was like, I thought I knew everything about this game. Clearly, I know nothing.
That's. I would have to say that's clearly the weakest puzzle in the game just because it's trial and error. But whatever.
Yeah, it really is just like, oh, so you keep doing it until you find... I mean, Sam and Max... Yeah. The puzzles aren't exactly the strongest suit of the game. Everything else in the game, in my opinion, is perfect. It's just that the puzzles are a little wonky here and there.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, one more thing I wanted to address. What? Have you turned into a horse, all of a sudden?
Yeah. I'm okay. Mr. Ed. You have to put peanut butter in my mouth to make me podcast now.
Well, you put plenty of peanut butter in your own mouth, so...
Fucking oath.
I probably put more peanut butter in my mouth.
I've seen you eat peanut butter. It's terrifying. The only thing terrifying than you eating peanut butter is you eating M&M's.
Oh, man. Don't get me started on M&M's.
No, no one wants to see that.
I'll never stop.
It's disgraceful.
It is. Anyway, I mentioned I was on Brian's podcast, and we talked about game soundtracks. And one of the game soundtracks that we talked about was Streets of Rage 2. And I remembered... And he linked me to a thing that some fans made that got taken down. They did sort of like a mashup thing where it was one big game where you could play levels from all the different Streets of Rage games and you could pick characters. But of course, they kept the music from Streets of Rage 2 because that's the best one. So I've been listening to a lot of the Streets of Rage 2 soundtrack. And the other day when I was listening to it, I thought of the most stupid thing ever. And I told you my idea. And I want to present it to the listeners because I know we have some...
God, I'd forgotten about this. Do you know, I just want to say, I saw someone the other day saying, oh yeah, the Streets of One soundtrack is so much better. And I was like, haha, Francisco would hate this person.
Probably. Anyway, so I'm going to put this out there to the loyal listeners, because I know we have very creative people out there. So I was thinking about games and side-scrolling brawlers and things and how Streets of Rage 2 is probably the best one with the best boss music and whatever. So I was thinking... You know, it would be great if somebody could make a side-scrolling brawler about a fan game for the Blue Cup Tools podcast. It could be called BCT Brawler, and you could pick either you or me, or we could play co-op together. And basically, it would just be us walking through different levels and fighting enemies, and then each boss would be one of the developers that we rant about on this. I haven't thought about this too much, to be honest, but my image here is like seeing...
You basically just want people to make a game with your face in it.
No, it's not that. You can... I mean, people... If people are so inclined, they can make a game, but I'm happy to just see a mock-up screenshot or something. I just want to see the image of, like, you and me in, like, 16-bit Genesis, like, in front of, like, a run-down building with a manhole cover that's just opened up, and Charles Cecil, the embarrassed crocodile, has come out, and we have to fight him as the boss. And he has...
I'm glad that you finally accepted that Charles Cecil is an embarrassed crocodile.
He has bite attacks, and he has his tail swing as an attack, and then when we beat him, he blushes and goes back into the sewer to make another sliding block puzzle.
He's Charles Cecil.
Well, yes. Anyway, that's basically what I want to say. So, if you listeners are so inclined to do something of that horrible nature, by all means, we won't say no if you submit it to us. So,
well, you clearly want this in your life. You're clearly encouraging this.
Well, I am encouraging it, but I'm not. I'm just saying it's not a requirement. I won't be sad if no one does it, but I'll be very happy if someone does. That's all.
Okay, that's
all
enough.
I'm saying. Anyway.
This is like one of those. This is like one of those things where there's like the starving orphans on the television. You're like, we'll be sad. You'll make sad eyes if no one does it.
Yeah,
but that's
well,
okay. That's fine. Just change the channel.
It's fine because they can't see my eyes.
Ads.
Oh, guilt trip ads are the worst. Anyway, that's all the housekeeping. Now let's talk about what we've been playing. What have you been playing?
Jesus. Skate 3 right now. Do you know what? I had to blow the dust off my PlayStation 3 controller. That's how long it's been since we podcasted.
Wow. Wow.
And I... Yeah. But, I got quite a list.
Yeah, me too. My list is probably not as long as yours, but it's there.
Yours never is. Well, it was once or twice, but anyway.
I have 8 games on my list.
I finished Pillars of Eternity.
Why did you say Pillars?
Like Pillars. I didn't want you to think I was saying pillows in my Australian accent.
It does not sound like you're saying pillows when you say pillars.
I'm gonna sleep with me pillars.
No. Because when you say pillows, you say pillows.
My oath.
Oh, I went to sleep with me pillows under me pillies.
Anyway. Yeah, so I finished that, and it was a pretty... It was a long game. It was a pretty big experience, but I enjoyed it quite a lot.
I'm surprised you finished it as quickly as you did. I mean, quickly is, of course, a relative term, but I was expecting you were going to spend like 6 months.
It was a few weeks.
Okay.
Of like, or a couple of weeks anyway, of like just a bit here, a bit, you know, just like, just getting into it. And then I got to the end and I was like, I feel with a lot of role-playing games, I felt the same with Wasteland 2. Around the 50-hour mark, they really start to drag for me. Mm. They're like, I'm just like, oh, this is, I'm ready for this. I'm ready, like, I've explored so much, I've done so much, I've fought so much, I've seen so many weapons that I just don't give a shit about. I've earned so many spells that I have no idea what the hell they do. Like, I just... That's one problem with Pillars of Eternity, is there's so much bloat. There's like 4,000 swords that all have minute differences, and I just... I literally couldn't give a shit. I come from, like, playing 90s role-playing games where you get 3 swords and, like, you have to wait until level 7 to get the good sword, you know? This gives you a good sword straight away, and then a different good sword, and then this sword, and then you don't know what that sword is. You're like, just give me one sword. I do not like the Diablo-style throw loot at you constantly, and you constantly have to decide which thing to use. That's not interesting to me.
Mm.
So... and also spells, there's just shitloads of spells that all do the same thing. I'm just like, I literally don't care. Just use whatever spells are left. Like, that was my spellcasting strategy, but for a lot of it. But I finished it, and I got to, like, the 50-hour mark, and I was just like, all right, I'm done with this shit. Like, this is a good game, and I'm enjoying it a lot, but I need to finish it, or I'm going to get bored of it. So I just kind of steamrolled the last kind of thing and did the boss fight without even reaching max level, which everyone's like, dude, why did you do that? And it was pretty tough, but, you know, I got through it, and I finished it, and I enjoyed it. I actually finished it with, like, 20 health or something stupid. Like, I was 3 hits away from failing.
Oh, but well. At least you won.
I got there.
Yeah.
I found it really interesting. It reminded me a bit of Neverwinter Nights 2, which I found really easy the whole way through, and then at the very last battle, it's just, like, crushingly difficult. I'm like, There's a few games like that. To me, boss battles, I guess... It depends on how they're done. Like, if it's a strategic thing, yeah, but if they're just damage soaked, fuck off. I don't want to sit here hitting the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. Just, I've done all that for 50 hours. Just let me end the story and let me be done. Anyway, so I did that. I played a short little adventure game called Gomo, if you're Australian.
Gomo, arigato, Mr. Roboto, Gomo.
Gomo, Gomo.
Gomo.
And
almost.
Yeah, that was interesting. It's got a really nice style, but I feel like most of the work went into the animation, and like the game was kind of tacked on at the end. Like the puzzles are pretty simple.
That sounds just like Broken Age. Oh
yeah. No, this didn't like Broken Age has a story. Well, the half that I've played and stuff like that. This was just literally, you know, a MacGuffin and obstacles.
Oh.
So, you know, but it was cute, and it's really short, like a couple of hours, so...
Okay.
But I knew it was short going in, so I wasn't disappointed or anything, you know. I had been warned that it was quite a brief experience, and the brevity did not worry me. But yeah, okay. So that's a cute little game that I enjoyed. If you like stuff like Machinarium or anything that, like, Animated Design do, check it out. I say, okay. I've been playing Dust Bowl, which is an AGS role-playing game.
Yes,
in a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Like, it's not perfect. Like, if this had come from a AAA developer, I'm like, ah, there's a few things I would have like polished up. But dude, it's a RPG made in AGS.
I saw you what tweeted a screenshot about a random encounter with a hot dog man.
Yeah, there's a hot dog man. I like him a lot. He sells meat.
He's dressed like a hot dog, isn't he?
He's dressed as a hot dog.
We had a little amusing look on Twitter a while back about hot dog costumes, didn't we?
Yeah, I like hot dog costumes.
And pizza costumes, too.
Well, you can't go wrong, really, can you?
I guess you can't, dressing up like food.
Yeah, anyway, so that's a good game. If you're an AGS-interested person, which I assume you are listening to this, it's done in, yes, I believe, the Commodore 64 palette, which, yes, isn't, it's not a thing. I never grew up playing Commodore 64. They're very much an American thing.
Yeah, I never really had one either, but I know plenty of people who are very much fanatics of that color
palette. Yeah, but I don't think it's the nicest color palette, but it really gives this game a very striking look and a very cohesive look, and I think they made a good choice doing that. There's a lot of, scavenging and stuff like that. Stuff that you find, it's a lot like Fallout, a lot like Stalker, a lot like those sort of games, but it's a bit cuter, I want to say. Yeah, I'm enjoying that quite a bit. I've already sunk a fair bit of time into that, and I'm probably going to sink a fair bit more. I mean, I plan to finish it. But it's an open-world RPG in AGS, so that's a technical achievement that don't see done in AGS very much. I'm very impressed. Yeah, I'm very impressed that a very small team managed to stay motivated enough just to pull off something so labor-intensive. Good on
them. Who made it?
I forget, because I'm a useless person.
Okay, fair enough.
But, just search for Dust Bowl Game. It's on Steam.
Yeah.
Lunch Truck Tycoon.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a guy. I was going through Steam just randomly wishlisting shit that,
Whistling?
Yeah, I was just like, what's some wishlisting?
Were you whistling? Were you whistling as well while you were wishlisting?
I was Whistler's mother.
Oh dear, I'm sorry. Did Mr. Bean rub things on you and go, "It's a cartoon, you're Whistler's mother"?
I really liked it. I really liked that film.
Me too.
It's so stupid.
It was dumb, but I loved it.
I was wishlisting random games on Steam. Yes. and Kelsey saw I wishlisted this shit and bought it for me. I was like, don't encourage me, seriously. But that's I played the bejesus out of it. I played 6 hours of this lunch truck simulator.
That's not playing the bejesus out of it.
Dude, you've clearly never played Lunch Truck Simulation. That is a long time in Lunch Truck Simulation, my friend.
I've played the Game Dev Story, and let me tell you, I put way more than 6 hours in the Game Dev Story.
Yeah, but that's different to clicking hot dogs.
Well, not really. Anyway.
It's basically different parts of the city are more busy on different days of the week. If it's the weekend, you want to go to the beach or the ski resort. Mm-hmm. If it's a Monday morning, you want to go to the city because everyone's bustling for work. That sort of stuff. And then there's special challenges and stuff like that. Some of the challenges are really difficult and I couldn't do them, but, I conquered the hell out of that city. I was the lunch truck king. It's actually, I've probably told you this, but I actually, a couple years ago, planned with my friend Ian, we were sick of being in the shearing shed game together, and we were like, oh, we should start a burger van together, a business.
And you were gonna call it I'll Be Burgered.
Well, I'll Be Burgered. Well, that was going to be our band name.
Yeah,
so that was our... I was genuinely excited to do it. Have you ever made burgers at, a fair or anything?
Why would I make burgers at a fair?
Well, because you... I don't know. I have. It's awesome.
I've never worked at a fair.
I really like... the times that I've done it, I really like if I'm helping out at a thing, I'm like... If people come along, I love doing that. I don't know why. You give the happy people of the fair their food and their drink, and they go away happy.
I've never worked at a fair, but I did work in the service industry for 3 years at Starbucks, and I can tell you that.
Yeah, but that's different because you're not getting happy fairground people. You're getting assholes going to work.
Well, sometimes, most of the time actually, but every now and then you'd get a happy person that was happy to get their coffee, and that made you feel good. But most of the time, it was a bunch of entitled assholes. But let's not get into that.
Yeah, but at the fair, everyone's happy because they're with their family and it's sunny. I used to draw. I used to give them a choice of whether I drew the ketchup on in a smiley face, a star, or a love heart.
When did this happen? I never knew you worked at a fair.
I've done it several times.
Oh. Are you doing it this weekend, too?
No, I'm taking my grandma, but I'm not working.
Okay. Fair enough.
She said she wants to ride the bumper car. She was
did you
like,
see what I did there?
Yeah, I did. She's like, my grandma's like, I want to go on the bumper cars. I hear you can smash into people on those. I was like, Jesus.
Yeah,
I
that's
need to
cute.
Get my grandma some Carmageddon.
Yeah,
like,
you
that's
do.
What she needs.
get her to wear her zebra sunglasses while she's smashing into people on the bumper cars.
She wears those zebra sunglasses because I bought them
Good.
For her and she loves them.
Good, I'm glad. you've also been playing Satellite Rain a hell of a lot.
Oh man, I finished Satellite Rain within like 4 days of it coming out or 5 days of it coming out. That's the first game I've finished in release week in a long time. But it is a fantastic game. And I'm not just saying that because they're made in Australia and therefore I've got national pride. It really is a genuinely good game. I adored it.
Did you not find out it was made in Australia until the end credits?
I kind of knew.
Oh, okay.
But I wasn't, because like, you know, the way the indie scene is now, I was like, well, maybe some people worked in Australia and some people worked overseas. That's quite often the case.
Yeah.
You know, but no, it's what was that, sorry?
No, nothing. Go ahead. Finish your statement.
It's made in Australia, and it's a lot like Commandos, except fair. I'm not picking on Commandos. I loved Commandos back in the 90s, but it's a... Oh, yeah, it's a tough one, you know, and I loved it, you know, and I remember my friend John ringing me up and like, because he was the one that lends to me, he's like, dude, how the hell do you do this final mission, and like walking him through it over the phone. That's the sort of, that's what Commandos is like, that's the sort of game you're dealing with there. But you know, we used to play some hard games back in the day and we liked it, kids, so there.
Yeah, they take that. We mean talk about kids. You're a kid still. Anyway, I was going to say that it was really interesting for me to see your progression of feeling towards Satellite Rain, because I was talking to you after you bought it, and you were like, yeah, I don't know. I just kind of bought it on a whim, and I don't really know if I like it yet. And you went from that to like, oh my god, this game is amazing, which was pretty
funny. Like, I'd forgotten that it was a thing, and then it just popped. I looked at GOG for something, and I'm like, oh, there's a new game out. And I'm like, oh, I kind of remember this. And I mean, it's a tactical, real-time, squad-based role-playing game in a cyberpunk city that's open world that you can explore to your heart's content.
Mm.
And a lot of that's got me written all over it, but it's been a long time. Well, I've finished one real-time strategy game this year, but most strategy and tactical things that I've played lately, I prefer real-time with pause or turn-based, just because it's hectic to do shit in real time. It really is. You panic and you make mistakes, and then you have to counter those mistakes that you made in a panic, and you forget what the controls are. It's like playing Heavy Rain, but you've never touched a PlayStation controller before in your life, which is actually how I played Heavy Rain, and therefore it was hilarious.
Well, there you go. Was it as hilarious as that video that Brian linked us to? Okay.
No, because I actually got some of it right. But a lot of my Heavy Rain playthrough was like, where the fuck's the round one? You know, So Satellite Rain was designed partially by the guy who, one of the people who worked on Syndicate Wars, and it's a spiritual sort of successor to Syndicate. I could never get Syndicate to work, and I've even tried the GOG ones and couldn't get them to work, so I really can't comment if it's similar to Syndicate or not, but I found it surprisingly forgiving. I expected a very difficult game. After playing stuff like Desperados and Robin Hood, Legend of Sherwood, or whatever it is, and, you know, Commandos, I was expecting that sort of difficulty level, and it's not like that at all. It's a lot more fair. There's a lot more options of stuff to do. It feels less like a puzzle game and more like a strategy game, and you can change on the fly. Like, some of the most exciting moments for me came from I'd be sneaking into a base, going about it all stealthily, and finally achieve my objective and get caught by the security and just have to run for it through like a hail of bullets. And that was just amazing, like looking ahead and see where patrols are quickly coming through and adjusting on the fly. That actually, the real-time strategy element really added to the experience now that I think about it. And interestingly enough, they made it so you can't really fail the game. You can totally fail missions, but there's no... As far as I can tell, there's actually no way to game over it. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
But one thing that I really like is, towards the end of the game, I really, really focused on stealth stuff. And I stopped doing big shoot 'em out missions except for one prison break right near the end, which is, most of the missions are completely optional. In fact, I will say this, all of them except for the last mission and the tutorial mission are completely optional. You could just hack ATMs and wait for your money to build up, like wait for a long time, but you could still do it, and then just walk straight to the last mission and do it. That's the sort of game they took.
Is that going to be your goal next time you play through it? Is that going to be your challenge?
No, that would take so long. That's horrible.
All right,
or you'd have to be really good at the last mission. But but yeah, one thing that I really like is I stopped doing much shooting and I was really focusing on stealth and infiltration. And I got to the last mission and I was like, oh, it's the last mission. There's tons of enemies. There's massive big robots. There's everything like that. So I went in guns blazing because I'm like, it's a boss battle. That's how you do it. You can't do stealth in boss battles. And I just missed out on beating the game by like the merest of margins. So I was like, okay, well, I'll try again. And reloaded. And this time, I just took a single unit in, and I won the boss battle with a single unit with stealth, doing it how I played the rest of the game. And I was like, that's so nice, because you play stuff like Deus Ex Human Revolution, where they take all the stealth stuff away for the boss battles, and you have to do the guns blazing shit. And it's nice to see somebody doing, like, actually respecting your decisions.
Yep.
I really appreciate that. But yeah, it looks great. It sounds great. It plays great. There's not much story. If you're into role playing games with the stories, there's really not much. It's got a basic story and a nice little beginning and ending cinematic. But there's one character like that has any talking, and she talks four times in the game. So
wow,
it's really that's not what you're there for. You're there for playing tactical, and I loved it for that. I really did. I mean, I put some time into this game. I don't know how long it took me to finish, but I'm guessing at least 25 hours. But you have to remember, I finished it in the week of release.
Okay. You said you played it on GOG, right?
I got the GOG version, not the Steam version.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to tell how long you played it for. Oh, well.
But yeah, I really like Satellite Rain. And I also really like Sinister City.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That one's on my list, too.
Yeah, well, we can both talk about that. I'll leave that one because I've got other games to talk about. Leave that until you come along and we'll both discuss it, because I recommended it to you and I don't regret doing it at all.
And I don't regret having it recommended to me, and I've recommended it since, so...
Same.
Yeah.
Okay, so I also played the Mags games that came out for the Hendrix theme, which is a hilarious theme to do. And I gotta say, I really enjoyed all these Mags games. So you should all check them out. But my favorite was definitely the Jimi Hendrix case or whatever it was, which was just... Have you played that yet?
No, I haven't. And I haven't had time. I've been playing other games.
Get a life.
If I got a life, I wouldn't be playing games.
Well, whatever. But yeah, you really have to play that. I really like that game.
It got some attention from Offworld, from Lee Alexander's site, because she likes adventure games. And...
Yeah, well, it's really good, yeah.
So that's
so play. I mean, it's short, but it's. I was
well,
like,
it's a Mags game.
I wasn't sure what to expect from it, and you know, the Leopold Keter one was great and very adorable, and had more animations than conversations, which is very rare for an adventure game. And Hendrix Island made me laugh. I mean, it made me laugh.
Okay.
But I won't say any more than that, because you can't say anything more without spoiling the game completely. But yeah, so I really enjoyed the Mags games for that month. They were really good, and I'm excited to play the One Room One Week competition games as well. But I haven't gotten around to do that because they've only just come out.
Yeah,
and I've been playing other things like Quest of Dungeon.
Oh boy.
Which is a roguelike and is the very first roguelike that I've ever finished in my entire life.
Really?
I've finished more pinball games roguelikes.
That's not true. You finished that one that guy did, that we both played, remember?
Not a proper roguelike. That was easy.
Well, it turned into one at the end.
Yeah, but there wasn't... No. Doesn't count. A Dark Room doesn't count.
Yeah, a Dark Room. That was it. That was a good one. I like that one.
That was a really good game, but it's not... That's not... No, that does... Okay. That's too easy to be a roguelike.
All right, fine.
I'm talking about a game that I've been playing for months.
Oh, okay.
in getting to like the second level of the dungeon and dying and getting to the third level of the dungeon. Today I beat it, and I was like, I didn't even know you could finish roguelikes, because I like played NetHack as a kid, and NetHack likes you as much as cancer likes you. There's like, ooh. NetHack is basically ASCII version of cancer that you choose to have.
Those are some harsh words.
That's horrible to cancer victims. Yeah, I'm very sorry.
Don't say those things.
But that's how NetHack is. It's just fucking, it's unforgiving, and it wants you to die. And whenever I see people playing NetHack, I just don't understand it. I'm like, it's like, I don't know how people do it. So to finish a roguelike, and like not just some like little baby one, but an actual, a pretty, you know, one where you had to, where I had to work for it, I was like, I finished it. I'm like, oh my god, I finished a roguelike. It's crazy. So yeah, so that was, but I really enjoyed it, and it's, I mean, I put a lot of time into it.
Yeah.
I can't deny that. But yeah, so that was really good. Okay. I've been playing some Starflight. I play so many games, I'm exhausted already, and I'm not even finished on my list.
Just barrel on down the list, and if there's anything interesting to say about any of them, say it.
Well, Starflight's incredible. Are you kidding me? It's a 1986 game with 800 unique planets to explore.
Wow.
That fits on a tiny, tiny 5.25-inch floppy disk. I think it only came on
five
when
and
I got
a
the
quarter.
Gold version. But yeah, it's a tiny...
5.25 inches is not tiny, okay?
So anyway. yeah, it's incredible, but it's funny because I was playing it and I ran into this horrible bug that meant that I lost my save game, and I listened to the Upper Memory Block podcast about Starflight. Hello, Joe. How are you?
Hi, nice
of you to be doing those still. Everyone should listen to those. And
yes,
he's like, oh yeah, there's this horrible bug if you do this. I'm like, oh my god, that's the thing that got me. So I lost all my progress in that, which was sad because I was having such a good time, like upgrading my little ship and like exploring new planets and getting, it was really good. And I like Star Control stuff. I like Protostar. So I'd played a bit of Starflight 2 and enjoyed that, but to go back and play the original was very enjoyable and rewarding. And yeah, that's really good. I've been playing Oli Oli 2 on my PlayStation Vita, and it's even better than Oli Oli 1, and I liked Oli Oli 1 a whole bunch. And I am nearly halfway through it in 5-star rankings, but Jesus Christ, it gets tough. Like, it's these last few goals to get to the halfway mark, I'm like, are you kidding me? So, like, but it's the sort of game where you'll be stuck on a thing for 2 or 3 days, and then suddenly it'll click and you'll just hit 4 objectives at once in one run, and you just be like, damn. Like, once you get that flow in, it just flows so naturally. So that's a really good feeling. It's a great game. And I also played some Tennis to the Face on my PlayStation Vita, which I have no idea why I picked up, but I was like, it's a game about hitting people in the face with tennis balls, I'll play that. It's basically it's a bit like Peggle but different, or Angry Birds but different. But anyway, you play as a tennis player who is out to kill everybody that works for an energy drink company, and you hit them with tennis balls. One thing I noticed though is the physics are really, really irregular. You can hit the same thing 5 times and it'll have a different effect every time. Like, you cannot change the angle. You can start on the default angle 5 times and every time the result will be different. So I don't know how that is, if there's some random taken into account or what it is, but it makes it a little hard. Like, sometimes you know the solution, but you have to try it 10 times before it actually works. So that can be a bit frustrating, but I mean, eh. And one time, I was really struggling with a level, and I'd been struggling with it for 10 minutes, and I just leaned to the side and accidentally bumped the fire button, and perfect scored the level. So, that's physics games for you. What do you do?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and lastly, and but definitely not leastly, I've been playing Neon Struct, which is a first person stealth game with
Marcus
no guns.
Person.
It's like Deus Ex 1, but with even lower FI graphics.
Oh, God.
And even more compressed story. Well, of course it's even more compressed. Deus Ex 1 is massively long.
Yeah.
But it's basically the same story, but compressed into, like, 1/10 of the time.
Oh.
And, like, I could see where the plot's going straight away. I was like, I know what's happening here. But it's still adorable, and you have to play Arkanoid to hack.
Okay.
So yeah, but it's actually really, really good. There's just that, there's just this perfect balance of like, you can go anywhere you want and do anything you want, but as long as no one sees you doing it. So that's always really fun. But I will say this, there's bits between missions, there's a bit between missions where you just go around your apartment building, you like, you get home and you walk around your apartment building, and it is the best part. It was the best part of the game for me, because I could just explore and like intrude into people's apartments by going up ladders and in through windows, and they'd be like, oh yeah, don't worry about me, I don't actually live here, it's fine, you can come in, I'm just squatting and stuff like that. And I was like, hee hee. It was like a bit like Jazz Punk in that regard. But the rest of it, you're okay, sneaking past guards, and you don't get caught, and you get rankings. Oh, you didn't get seen, you didn't have to knock anybody out. It feels good to like get all those rankings, so that's kind of fun.
Okay. Good.
So that's me.
Wow, yeah. Ooh.
We need to podcast more often just so I don't have to do that.
Yeah, I know. It's like it's a horrible build-up.
And now I'm going to sit here and just play Skate 3 while you talk for hopefully 10 minutes, then I get my breath back.
I don't think it'll take that long, but I'll try. So I have been playing games. I've decided to go back to my console because, as I've mentioned several times on this podcast, I've been on the fence about getting a PlayStation 4. But I've pretty much decided that at some point in my life I'm going to get a PlayStation 4, probably towards the end of the year, after Fallout 4 comes out, because I really want to play Fallout 4.
What a big decision to make. At some point you're going to get a console.
Yeah, well, you know. So anyway.
Sorry about commitment.
So the point here is that there are several franchises that I enjoy in the on the PlayStation 3, which are getting next-generation sequels. And so I've been playing through those in order to refresh my memory, because it's been a while since I played them. So, I mentioned I had been playing Batman Arkham Origins. I was playing the I Am the Knight mode, which was the permadeath one life mode. And I finished that. So I decided, since I had just played Arkham Origins, I thought, well, I want to play Arkham Knight. So let me play the other two Batman games. I haven't played them in a while. I actually hadn't played Arkham Asylum since 2009, and I hadn't played Arkham City since it came out in 2012, so I was like, well, I might as well check these out. So I played Arkham Asylum, and I enjoyed it again, although it was really, really odd going from Origins to Asylum, obviously, because, you know, Origins is the most recent, it's the most recent PlayStation 3 Batman game, even though it wasn't made by Rocksteady, but still, like, Arkham Asylum seems tiny by comparison, because you're only on the island, and like, you know, there's not all the stuff you need to find, and like, there's the Riddler stuff, but you don't really need to do it. I didn't do it again, and I just kind of like, you know, got through it. I maintain that you can probably finish Arkham Asylum in the span of one sitting. Like, you could probably start playing it, I did it in two, but you could probably start playing it at like 7 o'clock at night and pretend that that's when Batman is going into the asylum, and you could easily have it finished by like 3 or 4 in the morning if you're so inclined.
Especially if you use detective mode, it basically shows you everything you need to do.
Yeah, pretty much. So yeah, but it was interesting. I mean, the graphics are good, but you can tell that it was still like early days for then. It was their first attempt, so like some of the character models are a little weird looking. But overall, it's it was an enjoyable game. And then I played Arkham City, which I think is my favorite one out of the three Batman PlayStation 3 games, because it's just the most interesting, I think. And it still feels small by comparison to Origins, because Arkham City, I mentioned to you, there's an area of the map in Origins that is basically the area that becomes Arkham City, just not Arkham City yet. So that's the only bit in Arkham City, so it's like a compressed version of the map from Origins, so it's kind of like, well, that's... wow. I enjoyed Arkham City. It was fun to play again. I actually did want to do all the side quests, because I think the side missions are fun. And I did most of those. So I played the three Batman games. I played some more Just Cause 2. That's a fun game. I've just kind of been going... I haven't really been paying attention to the story. I've just been going around blowing shit up and causing chaos.
Dude, what's the story?
I don't know. You're just, like, working for... I haven't done any missions,
You just do the things and blow up the things. That's the story.
Well, I mean, there's faction missions and stuff like that.
That's still blowing up the things. There's no characters.
I know, but I haven't done those. I've just been going off on my own, discovering places and just trying to 100% all the places, which is kind of annoying because some of them you just have to find, like, weapon drops. And yeah. I just like blowing stuff up. Yeah. And I just recently discovered the black market function, which you can actually get really good weapons and vehicles and stuff, so that's been pretty cool.
Yeah, good.
So, yeah. I also finished Tender Loving Care, which I had been playing with Jess, and that was a terrible game. The ending, I mean, it's one of those things where supposedly the choices you make, which is pretty much just based on the questions you answer, affect the story, but it pretty much plays out exactly the same. The ending that we got was apparently one of the weird ones, but I looked on YouTube. Well, yeah, there's like maybe I think there's like five endings or something, but no one cares enough about the game to have done a Let's Play, so we couldn't really see the other endings. But they're apparently all terrible. I know Emily Morganti, of all people, has played Tender Loving Care because she posted about it on the Adventure Gamers forum a while back. So
interesting.
Yeah, it's a terrible game, but I mean, yeah. I also played
But nothing. It's terrible, but nothing.
Yeah. Alright, fine. So I also played The Walking Dead Season 2, which...
Did you finish it?
I did finish it, yes.
Okay.
So I have some mixed feelings about The Walking Dead Season 2, and it made me realize some things about myself. Well, it didn't make me realize, it just confirmed things I already knew about myself. Here's the thing with The Walking Dead. I've mentioned several times that I've tried to read the comic and I only got so far because it's very bleak and depressing and it just kind of gives you this feeling of hopelessness, and the games are kind of the same way. And it's... I was a little, I don't know, underwhelmed by the writing in the game because I've been thinking a lot about writing lately and character motivations and things like that, and it just seems to me that the most common thing to do in stories like that where you introduce characters and you know they're going to probably die at some point during the course of the story is that they very often wear their emotions and motivations on their sleeve. So there's a lot of walking in the forest scenes, and in those scenes, you know, they pad them by having multiple choice dialogues and things that ultimately don't really mean anything. And in those times, the characters are saying stuff like, oh man, I really wanted to be, before this hell happened, I wanted to be a blacksmith, but I couldn't open up my own shop, and I just want to go on and survive, and blah blah blah. And it's like, yeah, we get it. Okay, you're probably going to be dead in the next thing. It got to the point where at the end of the fifth episode, they're like, you know, they're down to, I don't know, like maybe three people, and there's this big frozen lake, and they're like, hey, it's a big frozen lake, and there's a cabin on the other side. I was like, oh, someone's going to die. You know someone's going to die.
Why would you not walk around the shore? I'm from a place where ice exactly. is a thing that you hear about, and I still know fucking go around it.
Yeah, exactly, because they were
have
like,
you
oh,
not seen, have they you said, not seen spring... Summer, winter, autumn, spring? Yeah. Or whatever it is. I forget the title of the movie.
No, I haven't, but...
Oh,
wait, is that the one...
Don't walk across frozen lakes.
Is that the one with the... About the monk?
Yeah, that paints the thing with the cat's tail.
With the cat's tail, yeah. No. Anyway, yeah, so, yeah, I think the excuse was it would take too long to go around or that there were zombies or something. I don't know, some crap, but yeah. So, it becomes very apparent that they're pulling the puppet strings, and they're just trying to do these things to manipulate you emotionally. And it did something in the very first episode that I think was the most traumatic scene in the entire game. And it actually literally gave me nightmares. And I don't care if you haven't played it, I'm going to spoil it for you. So, we talked a few episodes back, well, several episodes back, about Command & Conquer Red Alert 3, I believe.
No, just the Command & Conquer Red Alert is the one that I'd forgotten about the animation.
Okay, right. So we talked about Command & Conquer Red Alert and how there was a dog animation and how they go, rawr, 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 and how when they
die.
Yeah,
it wasn't so much the noise from... I was just like, they animate the people dying and it's like, whatever. But when the dogs die, they like explode into bits of dog. It's pretty... Someone obviously had a good time doing it.
I like the idea of bits of dog. Anyway, well, yeah. So I'm the type of person who I guess I'm desensitized, where if a person dies in a movie or a game or something, it's a bummer, but I'm just like, whatever. But if an animal dies, I really don't like that. So There's a scene early on in episode 1 of The Walking Dead season 2 where Clementine comes upon an abandoned camp, and the only surviving member of the family, because you find a picture, is the dog. And the dog is like, you know, he's kind of growly and whatever. And of course, through your actions, you interact with the dog. You can play frisbee with the dog. You can pet the dog. You can talk to the dog. And you think, oh, this is like Fallout. It's like dog meat. I'm going to have a little doggy companion. He's a cute little doggy, whatever. So you find some food, and Clem starts eating the food, and the dog, you know, sits there patiently next to her and whatever, and you have the choice to feed the dog. So of course I fed the dog. So then the dog, like, she's like, okay, don't eat the whole thing, and she gets it back, and the dog growls and snaps at her, and, like, suddenly the dog just becomes evil and starts biting her and grabs onto her, because it's a plot point that she needs to get bitten by this dog. So the dog becomes vicious and is, like, biting her, and you have the option to punch the dog or stab the dog or whatever. So she finally kicks the dog over a log that's hiding some... Yeah, she kicks the dog over a log. So I'm like, well, that sucks. I like the dog. Whatever. But then she looks up and over, and she hears the whimpering of the dog, and lo and behold, it turns out that when she kicked the dog, it got impaled on some tent spikes, and she looks at it, and the dog is there on its side, just kind of like pawing with trying to walk, going and its like tongue is hanging out and the eyes are rolling back in its head and it's all bloody, and it's the most disturbing 3D animated cell-shaded cartoon dying dog I've ever seen in my entire life.
I'm like,
Jesus Christ, what are you doing to me, Telltale? And then, to make things worse, they did a good fucking job of it. So then I get to either mercy kill the dog or leave the dog to die. And I was like, well, the dog...
biting at you.
Yeah, so I was like, well, the dog was, you know, whatever, so I'm going to mercy kill the poor thing. So she leans in with her knife and she slices open the dog's throat with her knife, and it goes, oh! And I was just like, Jesus.
Does it make gurgling noises?
Yes, it makes gurgling noises. And I was just like,
at your misery, I'm sorry.
No, at this point I was just like, fuck off, Telltale. What are you doing?
Have you ever seen the film I Am Legend starring Will Smith?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, don't see it. There's a bit with a dog in that. Don't see that.
Yeah, I'm not.
I mean, there's various reasons to not see that film.
Well, yes.
That's one that applies to you.
One of them being that they changed the ending, but...
Anyway. Well, yeah, but anyway. I didn't mind the film, but there's the bit with the dog, and like...
I mean, it depends on how it's done. I mean, if it's super graphic, yeah, that sucks. It was pretty super graphic in the... I mean,
wasn't super graphic. It was just a sad moment.
Yeah, so anyway.
I just spoiled
the dog,
the movie anyway. Like, you know what's going to happen now.
That's... Well, any time there's a dog in anything, you know the dog...
No, that's not
die.
True. It's not true of Fallout games and Arcanum.
Yeah. Anyway, so... So there's a scene in the third episode where a guy literally gets his skull caved in by a guy with a wrench, and you see, like, the eye socket crushing, and you see his teeth sticking out of his bloody, dismembered face. And that didn't bother me as much as the dog. So...
Well, maybe you liked the dog, but didn't like the guy that gets his head caved in.
Well, no, I didn't like the dog. I didn't like the guy that gets his head caved in.
Well, there you go.
He was an asshole.
To see his teeth poking out of his socket.
Well, I wasn't happy, but...
Maybe you're like, yeah, you deserve to have your skull caved in with a wrench.
Yeah.
Despicable asshole.
Yeah, anyway.
Is that what you said?
No, it's not what I said, but I was glad that he was dead. Anyway.
And caved in.
Yeah, I mentioned that I've played the Batman games. I just started this. My intent is to play it this weekend, and I know this is going to cause you some upset, but I'm playing through I'm playing through the Uncharted games.
I guess as soon as you said, I know what this is. Why? It's not like there's any story to remember.
No, but I want to see how they hold up. I'm curious, out of morbid curiosity. Because I played the first one a couple of times, because I played it the hard mode, and same with the second one. I only played through the third one once, so I don't really remember much of it. So I'm playing through the first one, and I'm pretty much still enjoying it. It's you know, I haven't gotten too far, but I remember bits of it. And so I'm really curious to see if my opinion of 2 will change any playing
I think,
again.
I think the reason why I hate 2 so much was explained a lot to me when you played the first Deus Ex game. And we're like, oh yeah, I didn't like it how you couldn't just press a button to take cover and like hide right. from people. I hate pressing buttons to take cover. That's my least favorite thing. It makes me feel like right. I'm not in control. It turns out, I know they call it in the RPG codex, they call it pop-a-mole, where it's like whack-a-rat. You're like...
Right.
Yeah. So I really detest that. To me, combat is about movement.
Yeah, one thing that I've noticed in the first Uncharted that I guess it's because I'm used to it in other games and I just never really thought about it when I first played it is... There's the option to sneak up behind guys and, like, stealth kill them, but it's not really a primary focus of the game. So there's no sort of, like, crouch or sneak button or any sort of way to be stealthy aside from just, like, walking up behind them really slowly and then just stealth killing them. Mm. And that's a shame. I really wish that there was a little bit more focus on stealth game. But it's a Hollywood blockbuster in the form of a video game, so of course they want to have guns and shooting and stuff. So,
you kill a lot of people in Uncharted games.
You do. You're a mass murderer in
you kill
games.
Fucking thousands.
You really do. Anyway, I also started replaying the Dagger of Amon-Ra with Jess, because she's never played it before. And it's... You know, I've recommended you play it. I'm going to redact that recommendation and modify it slightly. I'm going to recommend that you play it, and you play it the first time without the voices turned on. Because it really does have some nice writing, and it has some clever things that it does with the writing. But the voice acting is really terrible. I would say play the game through once to enjoy it for the game with just the text, and then play it again
a
little bit.
I had to turn
the
voice acting off in Gabriel Knight. So.
Oh, so yeah, you're not going to like the voice acting in the Dagger of Amon-Ra.
Did I tell you that I watched a YouTube clip of the Archaeologist song?
Maybe.
And when I did, I was like, dude, this... You cannot pick on people for saying
oh,
how
right,
Golden
right.
Wake feels yeah. like. Because I looked and I was like, dude, this is exactly... You basically made a fan game.
My dancers
when
are better.
When I look at it, like, the aesthetic is... I was just like, are you kidding
well,
me? The colors, like...
There's only so much aesthetic you can go for in a 1920s game.
Bullshit.
But my dancers are better animated than the ones in the Dagger of Amon-Ra. So
I thought they were pretty good from what I saw, but of course it was only a couple of seconds in the Archaeologist song, and
they're
I was
like three
too
frames
busy.
Each.
I was too busy giggling.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. So finally, last but definitely not list on definitely not list on my last
list.
Last but not definitely not least on my list is Sinister City, which. Sinister City, easily the best 9 cents I've spent in a long time on Steam. It was on sale this past weekend, 91% off, $9.99 regular price, but it was on sale for 9 cents. And I bought it, and I played it, and I enjoyed it. And
are you sure it was $9.99 regular price? Because I bought it for someone yesterday, and it was 99 cents.
I'm pretty sure it's regular price, $9.99.
I don't
maybe,
know. Anyway,
maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Anyway,
I got this. I remember I had seen Rizulka tweeting about this, and I was like, "Oh my god, this looks amazing!" Like, and I just kind of set off the cuff, like, "I would. This sounds like my thing. It's a hidden object game that seems incredibly self-aware about how ridiculous it is."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "That sounds amazing!" And then like she gifted it to me. She's like, "Oh yeah, this was on sale for 9 cents. So here you go." And I was like, "Yes!" So I played it that night and. Halfway through me telling you how great it was, you went and bought it and for 9 cents.
Well, I couldn't say no for 9 cents. Mm. Like, if it had been any more, even if it had been 99 cents, maybe I would have said no.
Are you kidding me, dude? It's 2 hours of laughing.
It was 2 hours of laughing. I loved how stupid the reasons for finding things was, and it got to the point where like, because the one thing that bothered me about it was that it wasn't exactly clear. It was kind of pixel hunty.
There was stuff hidden behind things that you've clicked on 14 times and
yeah.
something.
But it got to the point where I was like, I would see things and I would see many of the same item and I was like, well, I'm going to have to pick these up after.
Yep.
This. So,
like, I, I love, like, the writing in it is fantastically bad. I like to think it's self-aware, because you go and meet your vampire mother-in-law, and yeah, you're like, I want to talk about your daughter, I want to ask for a hand in marriage. She's like, I don't think the air's the right temperature to be having this sort of conversation. You need to fix the air conditioner. Find these parts. And then you get there, and then when you do it, she's like, there, don't you think the air's much more appropriate to having this conversation now? I love that so much. Yeah, it's the funniest thing to me. So yeah,
pretty ridiculous.
I really, really enjoyed the game.
But I like my favorite part of the game. Yeah, my favorite part of the game was when you're talking about the vampire, talking to the vampire mother-in-law. And the premise of the story, for those who haven't played it, is that you're this guy John, I think his name is.
Yeah.
He's very vanilla. And his future wife has been kidnapped by a vampire who, as it turns out, is actually her father. So you're talking
spoilers,
so,
if you give a shit.
Yeah, so most of the game she's locked in this cage in his castle, and so at the end of the conversation with the mother-in-law, the future mother-in-law, she's like, hey, I have an idea, why don't you kidnap her back? And I was like, what? Why would you suggest
so
I literally screamed out, what? Like, why would you suggest like, rescue is one thing, but kidnap her back? That's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
Well, so she's. I love the therapist a lot.
Oh, the therapist was amazing.
She's totally flirting with you, but she's like, oh yeah, the count is going through, like, he's 500 years old and going through a midlife crisis. But let's not talk about him.
Let's talk about you and me. And then at the end, she's like, oh, goodbye, you handsome manifestation of all my childhood complexes. I like the fact that the way you get into by the way, I love the fact that she's located next to the Vampire State Building. That was ridiculous.
I love that. That was the thing that I think that I told you that turned you. That was your turning point when I was like, dude, they have the Vampire State Building. You're like, all right, I'm going to get this.
No pun intended, of course, about turning. But I like the fact that in order to get in to see the psychologist or the psychiatrist or whatever the hell she is, you have to find like 8 copies of Psychology for Dummies. No, Psychology for Dudes. That's right, Psychology for Dudes. And the best part is that when you try find him, he's like, I may be a lot of things, but I'm not a thief. I'm gonna have to pay for these. So you first have to look for loose change in the street, and then you like, there's only like 5 books in the actual bookseller's stand, and the rest of them are just strewn around the street. Which
one's in the mailbox?
Yeah, it's like, why would you pay for? How are you gonna pay for this? And he only gets like 50 cents or something. So he just gets like 8 books for 50 cents. That's pretty ridiculous. Anyway,
doesn't matter. It is a hilarious hidden object game.
Yeah, I actually really like the music, and the soundtrack is included for free.
That was pretty good. But like, it even made a lot of mistakes that hidden object games shouldn't make. I've played a lot of like really polished hidden object games, and
this
just
one
made
was pretty
major mistakes.
Yeah, and it's also pretty buggy. I had to quit out and go in. There was a lot of graphical glitches,
but
I mean, for
funny,
9 cents,
funny shit.
Yeah, for 9 cents, you can't really go wrong.
Yeah, at first I was like, oh man, this game's so bad. And then you talk to the guy at the receptionist. You're like, oh, I'm trying to find my wife, and he's like, okay, come out the back and I'll put you under hypnosis. And you're like, okay. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this game's going to be one hell of a ride.
Yeah, so he's like, find the parts of my hypnosis machine.
I want to say like, it's like an hour and a half long, but for a couple of cents, whatever.
I think you told me it took you 109 minutes to finish. It took me It took me 113, so.
Okay, so it's nearly 2 hours. I was wrong.
It's a little over an hour and a half.
2 hours is 120 minutes.
Yes, I know that. I know that now. Listen, shush.
And we're nearly at an hour. We have to wrap up, dude.
We're past an hour. We're at an hour and 8 minutes. Nah, our last podcast was an hour and 45 minutes. We can...
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Oh,
anyway,
that's too long.
I know. Anyway, so now that we've talked about what we've played and spent the majority of our podcast talking about this, let's get on to our topic. We have a sort of a macabre topic this week.
How sad.
We probably should have saved it for the Halloween episode, but whatever. What's our topic, Chandler?
Well, I was playing Loom recently.
Yes.
And Loom's a great game.
How come you didn't mention it on your list of stuff?
Because I had too fucking many, and everyone's played Loom, so they all know what it is.
All right, fair enough.
Or if they hadn't, well, what are you doing? Anyway, yeah, so I played Loom, and what I really like, and I sort of hadn't really paid attention to much before, is that because of the whole thing where how the patentes where the dead are, like, the, mm-hmm. every place you go, like, one thing that's really nice about Loom is that you've got all these different cultures. It's the time of guilds, and you go from culture to culture, seeing, like, each little thing and what they do and everything like that. And one thing I really like is they all have graveyards. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. And then, you know, of course, at the end of the game, when the pattern tears, they're the holes that you go through, the little tiny graveyard up on the hill that's like 4 pixels for the shepherds, mm-hmm. and the glass blowers, sort of, and where Rusty sleeps. Rusty sleeps in a graveyard. What a fucking... He's a weird guy, Rusty. And he's a very angry one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so... I wanted to talk about not just graveyards in games, but remembering the dead and that sort of thing. Because in games, dying is a thing that happens a lot of the time with very little consequence. If you murder someone in a game, like Wolfenstein 3D, you really... The only thing that happens is you're like, oh, I got to find more bullets now because I've murdered someone.
Yeah, and their body like, disappears or something.
Yeah, like, no, they fall on the ground. Like, it's... That's what death is a lot of the times in adventure games. And a lot of times if you die, what happens is you press a button to restart, like restore your game. So I like it. I'd like to talk a bit about when death is a little bit more significant in games. And a couple of things I wanted to mention, and we're going to be going back to the DOS era again. Obviously, Wing Commander. There's this thing in Wing Commander that happens when one of your teammates dies in a mission or you die in a mission. Yeah. They have a funeral. And I remember being a kid and, like, this funeral really sort of... I'd never seen that before. And so, like, I really felt bad. I was like, oh, my God, they're having a funeral. And you see the little casket, like, drift off into space.
And they give you a 21 laser gun salute, and then it just scrolls away and says the end. Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that in a long time, but yeah, that whole funeral scene when you die in Wing Commander is really something else. That's
I had always just been like, oh crap, I gotta start again. You're like, oh, this game's hard. But then Wing Commander, I was like, oh my God, there's a funeral. Like, that was a really momentous occasion for me.
Yeah.
Seeing that and like having some real significance tied into the death of it,
mm-hmm.
that was a really unique thing. And I thought, what a cool thing to think about, and why isn't that done more often? One thing that really interested me when I was talking to Captain Nemo about King's Quest VI before I played it is he said he really sort of got spooked by this whole thing where every time you die, you walk through the sticks and you go through the... And like... That was a really big thing for him. And then when you finally get there in the game, it was like, oh my God, this is the place.
Yeah, this is the place. Yeah, that was a cool thing that King's Quest VI did pretty
well. And then they did what is both the worst and best decision in the entire game.
Yeah.
It's both the stupidest and the best bit of the whole game, where you play Ribs as a Glockenspiel to make a skeleton dance so he drops his keys, which basically ruins any of the atmosphere that the section had completely, but also is the best part because you get make a skeleton dance with the Glockenspiel ribs. But yeah, that's a really interesting thing, and you think of how many times you die in Sierra games, and all the times they just treat it as a comedy thing, but suddenly there was this whole ceremonious kind of, you're dead.
Yeah, I think that kind of tied into the whole incorporating the Land of the Dead as an area in the game. Because in the in the guidebook to the Land of the Green Isles, there's actually a chapter about like death and how it's significant to the Land of the Green Isles residents and stuff. So yeah, it basically goes into like the legend of the Land of the Dead and all that stuff. So yeah, I think it's definitely interesting to see it as a consequence there. I was thinking
one other thing I'll just quickly introduce before we get too deep in is sometimes death can be used as a character trait, like obviously Joey Malone. You know, but also like if you've played Anachronox, which I don't think you have Fatima, who is dead, and she was Sly Boots' secretary, and upon her death, he uploaded her matrix to a apartment/spaceship plane thing that happens to be the game's mouse cursor. So she's basically Secundo, from Beyond Good and Evil, except she's a dead person instead of an AI, and she's bitter about it, and basically hates Boots for being depressed, and like she's like, you know. So yeah, wow. that's an interesting character trait. Her being like dead and like not happy that she still has to stick around with the asshole that she was with when she was alive.
Interesting. That
she's a secretary. Yeah, so that's cool. And that's not a spoiler, that's how she starts the game. As your mouse cursor. A dead ghost haunting the spaceship apartment mouse cursor that you control in the game.
That is the weirdest, nerdiest thing I've ever heard you say. Well, maybe not ever, but...
You've clearly never played an Equinox.
clearly I haven't, no.
It's a fucking cool and weird game. Anyway, sounds sorry.
Like no, I was just going to talk about graveyards in adventure games, and I can rattle off several adventure games that have graveyards as significant places where you have to go. Like, of course, the first Gabriel Knight, you go to St. Louis Cemetery, number one, and there's a bit later on where you actually have to go inside the Getty Tomb and find some stuff. Monkey Island 2, of course, you have to you have to do some grave robbing in order to complete your voodoo doll. Kyrandia, actually, in Kyrandia 3, there's a bit where you can put flowers on the grave of the king and queen, and the queen's ghost actually comes and like screams at you, which I
don't. You put flowers on the grave in Kyrandia 1 at the end.
Yes, actually, yes, you do, and you get and the spirit of the mother comes out and gives you a spell, and it's very sweet and nice. But in Kyrandia 3, it's kind of played for laughs, which is
excuse me.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like, this is going to sound really, really morbid, and I'm going to probably come off as a weirdo, but I don't care. The thing that's always bothered me about graveyards in adventure games is that a lot of times they're played off for comedy. Like, you can read tombstones and they'll have funny rhymes on them.
Shit.
Yeah, and it depends on the tone of your game, but, I mean, yeah, that's always kind of bugged me a little bit. And the other thing is that... So Dave has mentioned a thing a few times where he talks about character development and how it's more interesting than, like, rather than listen to somebody tell you about their life story, it's more interesting to break into their house and, like, go through their things and learn about them that way. So I've always, like, when you see, because when you go to graveyards in real life, like, there's tombs and things and you can, you know, walk past them. You don't go inside them, obviously. But in adventure games, like, I've always wanted to go inside tombs, and I, like, Gabriel Knight is one of the few adventure games I can think of where you can actually go inside a tomb and, like, open the drawers and look at the dead people inside and stuff, and that's, like, it's morbid, but it's actually kind of creepy in a cool way. Like, I've always wanted to, like, break into tombs, and, like, in Quest for Glory 4, there's a graveyard, and there's a tomb, an above-ground crypt that you can... open up and go underground, and it's a secret passage and stuff, and that's pretty cool. But then there's another one that if you open up during the daytime, a rotting corpse falls out and like lands on you, and you're just like, ah, and you put it back in. But if you open it up at night, a ghost comes out and you have to fight a wraith, which is kind of cool.
There's a wraith in Quest for Glory 1, isn't there, if you go to the graveyard at night?
Well, there's a whole bunch of ghosts, yeah, but they kill you immediately if you're not wearing your undead unguent.
Yeah, that was terrifying when I played that. And like, 25.
Yeah, because it's got that horrible, like, cacophonous music that starts when you go inside.
Yeah.
And actually, it doesn't turn off when you die, so if you die, it, like, plays even more loudly, so it just gets more horrible and loud, and it's really scary. But yeah, like, graveyards in adventure games, they can be spooky, but I always kind of want to explore them more.
Well, you get to explore, like, sometimes, I think it's different, there's differences between a graveyard and, like, a tomb.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in Conquest of Camelot, you've got that whole bit where you're in a big tomb, and, like...
Oh, yeah.
And that, like, that creepy thing tries to lure you in, and, like, that sort of stuff. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
But one thing that really interested me is that presents, like... There's this whole historical exploration thing that kind of goes back to the Tutankhamun's tomb thing where you had, like, explorers that's what they did, going to tombs, and there was, like, this whole... That was the whole adventure thing, like, Tomb Raider, you know, and, yeah, so it's really interesting. One thing that I really liked in Arcanum is how they played with the dead. There's a couple of different things in there that's interesting. Obviously, it's a Fallout style game, so you can rob graves and get like and literally get money for it, or just like bash the zombies in graveyards for experience, which is all well and good. But there's also some really interesting stuff that they did in there. There's one bit where a very wealthy sort of aristocrat woman asks you to go. There's this whole like fashion trend of having ancient elven artifacts from their tombs, and she asks you to go and retrieve an artifact from this newly discovered tomb so that she can outdo Mrs. whatever her name is down the street, who's just got some different elven artifact. So you go there and there's some elves there, and like they basically tell you off from like being a grave robber, and you know, this is sacred ground and you're not supposed to be here, and you can like fight them or you can really do what you want. But that was really interesting to me, to portray it as a sort of cultural insensitivity, as treating these historically significant sites to a certain culture as a sort of, oh, a little curious oddity, as like, oh, I want to have the latest thing, or that's an interesting thing, rather than going, oh yeah, explore the tomb, being like, well, think about what this might mean to other people. There's another bit where there's a jeweler's shop. This is spoiling Arcanum, but whatever. There's a jeweler's shop where there's a dwarf outside waiting, who's trying to get in and see them, and you usually want team members at that point, so you recruit him, usually, but you can go down without it. And when you finally get let into the basement, whether you fight your way in or talk your way in, you find out that that's actually on the site of an old ancient dwarven burial ground, and they're using dwarven zombies as labor to, like, do their work. And of course, if you have the dwarf with you, he's absolutely outraged and like, this is a disgrace. But the people are like, well, they can't feel anything, they're not doing anything, they're like, they're a good workforce, like they. So it's interesting, like, to see the different, for one, people, zombies are just a thing that you kill, or, you know, minions, and for other people, they're like, well, these are my people. And it actually, it's really interesting, because the dwarf is convinced that they're his people, and it turns out later on that they weren't his people at all. Oh. Like, it's, and he's like, he's really looking for a clan that doesn't, yeah, that wasn't his clan at all. He's just desperate to find someone to call his people, which is a really nice little touch. But that's not about dead people, so, unless Magnus dies, which he sometimes does.
Okay.
Yeah, but yeah, that was a really nice touch, I think, in that game, is going, oh, it's not just zombies or loot. This is actually a culturally important thing to certain people, and you shouldn't loot them if you're that, like, it makes it more of a, less of a, oh, if you get caught, then, you know, zombies are going to catch you while you sneak around the graveyard. But this is something that you have to make a moral decision on, and where you stand will affect what you make that decision about, which is cool. That you don't see games doing that sort of thing much, about something as simple as a place to loot. That was really cool for me. So yeah, that was interesting.
I'm trying to think of other games where cemeteries are like an important plot point.
I think it's a lot of the time it's in role-playing games, because like, oh, we need a place to spawn zombies, or real-time strategy games where they're like, oh, we need a place to spawn zombies. So you literally just build a graveyard and they put it in.
Well, in like, King's Quest, there's a pretty significant set of graves and stuff in King's Quest IV. But they also, some of them also, some of the graves also have, like, silly limerick messages, but a lot of them don't.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it too much, because I know you haven't played King's Quest IV and you want to.
I do want to.
Yeah, but there's a whole puzzle where there's a house, a haunted house, and there's a whole bunch of ghosts in it, and you kind of have to, like, find their graves and then help them that way, which is, it's cool, actually.
That's a cool idea, actually. That's really nice.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a little silly, because it's, well, not to talk too much about it, but you end up going into a crypt, to a tomb, actually, later on. So yeah, that actually is another game where you can go inside the tomb.
Okay.
I've been inside a lot of tombs
and crypts, but I mean, that's role-playing games for you.
Yeah, not so much in adventure games.
Yeah, that's right.
But I just wanted, like, you know, like a fancy rich person in like one of those above ground things. You open it up and you just like can loot all their
like
crap.
A mausoleum.
Yeah, like a mausoleum, and then like yeah. There's also in Laura in the Colonel's Bequest. There's also a tomb which actually has stuff you can loot in it.
Isn't there a body in the well?
There can be, yes.
I remember
her crabbiness
shrieking when the body popped out of the well. That's the only bit I saw because someone showed it to me, but I was like, that's funny.
There's certain murders that can you can find the body in more than one place. So yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I've been reading about the history of Sierra and stuff like that, and it's really clear that Roberta Williams, especially with Mystery House early on and stuff like that, was really inspired by Agatha Christie, so that's pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the Colonel's Bequest is basically her trying to be Agatha Christie. But yeah, there's actually Mystery House, but without any story. That's true. There's actually a little ghost that comes out in the graveyard in the Colonel's Bequest sometimes. It's an Easter egg, but it's there.
I know a Sierra game with some cool graveyards is Gold Rush. One thing I really liked in Gold Rush is you can steal flowers from the park, and I tried to give them to the secretary where Jared works, but he wouldn't give the flowers to her because she flirts with him or he flirts with her, one of the two, and I was like, oh, you should totally come west with me, but she wouldn't. So I had these flowers, and I went to the graveyard, and you're on a timer, but it was my first run, and I didn't, I was like, there's no timers, it doesn't matter. Obviously, I played the game on my first try.
The graveyard is in Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Oh, I wonder if it's Greenwood Cemetery.
I think it is, actually.
Oh, that's funny.
And you can actually take the flowers, and you can find your parents' grave, and put the flowers on their grave, which is really sweet. And you get, and this is going to spoil a puzzle in Gold Rush, but... Yeah.
Does a rat come and break a vase and you get $20 to pay your fare to go west? Oh.
No. You get a letter from your brother which has a thing with which talks about burying grandpa and there's certain letters that are highlighted that's like the message is like if you read just those letters it's like found gold or something like that. Like it's an encrypted thing, but there's little chunks cut out of the piece of paper.
Yeah,
and when you finally get to, I forget what the place is called, Rudder's Fort or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
When you finally get there, you find old Pop's grave, and you put the letters, you put the letter on like the epitaph, and move it around until you reveal a hidden message, which was really cool. I really liked that puzzle.
Wasn't there something similar to that in Resonance? But you had to fill in the blanks.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty
people
cool.
Die in Resonance too. Yeah, but that was there's a scene in Resonance with a graveyard.
Yeah, there is. You don't really get to Kathy interact Rain. Too much with it, but yeah.
And in Cathy Rain.
Yeah, true, but that's not.
But we can't talk about that yet because no one's played it.
Yeah.
Except us. Yeah, but yeah, so that was one thing really nice about Gold Rush because again, it's giving Jared a history. Like it cements him in as part of this place like it does with the people in Loom.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean if nothing else, at least graveyards and adventure games if you can't explore them, they at least make for good world building because obviously it means that people have been living in this place long enough that they've died there, so...
There's a history, yeah.
Yeah.
And if you find, finding Jared Wilson's family in the graveyard, that really feels like he belongs there.
Yeah, exactly.
He's not just some guy who... That's one thing I love about Gold Rush. I know I go on about Gold Rush way more than it is a good game. Like, I am not blind to Gold Rush's flaws, but it's got this really great sense, because you start off the game not as, like... Guybrush Threepwood rocking up and being like, oh, I want to be a pirate in some world that he doesn't belong in, or like Bernard and Laverne and Hoagie and these alien worlds that do nothing. This, you really feel like you've got a job that you can go and quit before you leave. You know, you've got like, there's a little guy in his house that sells tickets, and you walk to his gate and he sees you and he looks up from the window and he's like, oh, and he like goes and opens the door and he walks out to meet you. And there's a guy across the road, like, mowing his lawn. It really gives you this sense of place, of being, of people live here. There's people walking around, there's carts, you've got a job. You know the people.
And when you walk past the guy mowing his lawn, he goes, knock, knock. And you say, who's there? And he goes, doctor. And you say, doctor who? And he says, how did you know it was me?
He was painting a fence, dude.
Same thing. He was doing yard work.
They are not the same thing. They're two entirely different disciplines.
You sometimes are so pedantic.
Well, if your mother, when you went home to visit her, said, dear, would you be a deer and mow the lawn? And she went out 2 hours later and you've painted the fence, she'd be like, dude, well, I think you've got some basic comprehension issues here.
First of all, my mother wouldn't call me dude. Second of all, we don't have a fence. Third of all, I got nothing, but...
Well, then don't try and make 3 points when you've only got two to bring to the table.
Yeah. Do you have anything else to talk about graveyards?
Good question. Yeah, it really caught my attention when I was playing Loom. And it's got a lot of graveyards in there. I think there's 4 or 5. You've got the one at the start.
Well, if anything, it's because it's a plot point because of the fact
that... But I'd never noticed how much it gives the places a sense of place. Like, obviously, you go and find your mother's tombstone at the start to get the clue to open the sky.
Mm-hmm. That Weaver graveyard, by the way, is one of the most beautiful backgrounds in the game. Mm-hmm.
That game is beautiful. It's a stunning game. I really noticed, I was really taking notice of how much work went into establishing a sense of culture. And like, when you arrive, because as Bob and you don't start out a very accomplished weaver. And when you arrive, people are like, oh, I've heard tale of the Great Guild of Weavers. And you're like, oh, man, who are these things? And then the whole, like, the lore behind them, you know, how Cobb looks into his face. And, like, under the cloak, all that sort of stuff gives it a sense of place. And I was all noticing that. I'm like, man, there's so many graveyards. Each of these places feels like its own little culture because of that. It's not one... It's not one big area that's all shared by a bunch of different guilds. It actually feels like different cultures. They bury their dead where they die, like where they lived, which is really interesting. I actually went to a funeral recently of an old guy that I used to work for, Andrew. I think he was very close to 80. Mm-hmm. I really liked Andrew. He was a great guy, great sense of humor. We got along very well, and I was very sad to hear his passing. But, you know, he'd had a good life and everything like that, and he had a bit of a struggle with cancer. But they had his funeral on a hill overlooking his farm, and it was the most incredible thing because we weren't in a graveyard going through the motions or anything like that. We were up there where he'd lived his whole life working the land, and I really got this sense of, like, this is where the guy belonged. This is where he wanted to have his ashes scattered. It was a really beautiful moment, and I realized that that the whole thing with the pyramids, the whole thing with, like, being buried, going back home to be buried, like, a lot of people want to be buried back home and stuff like that. Mm. It's kind of like, this is where I live, this is who I am. It makes you a part of that place, I think. Yeah. And that's really beautiful to me. And then you watch The Big Lebowski, and it's the most horrible thing possible. What a horror. I felt so... I was like, oh, that's the worst... thing.
Poor Donnie.
Yeah.
Well, poor Walter.
The most awkward hug ever imaginable. Yeah. That's the most awkward. What a great film.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it.
Good. Well, we've been talking a lot, and I'm hot. And we talked more about what games we played than our actual topic.
Well, it was a catch-up podcast. We want to get Dave Gilbert back on the podcast, and we got some other guests that we want to have along as well. So this was our catch-up podcast, but we'll hopefully we're back. Hopefully my internet behaves, and hopefully you'll stop going on fucking holiday, and we'll get back.
Believe me, I'm not going anywhere for a while.
All right. So
anyway, before I forget, I wanted to give a shout-out. Speaking of mittens, I want to give out a shout-out to Darren Reed, a.k.a. Kentaros, who is making a game based on the 60s TV show The Prisoner. he showed it at Mittens, and he informed me at Mittens that he is a fan of the podcast. So,
oh, nice. I will instruct Kintaros, if he hasn't, go to the Digital Antiquarian, which is filfree, filfre.com, and look at what he wrote about the 1980 game based on The Prisoner, because Jimmy Mayer did a really cool talk about it and some really interesting ideas, and the guy that designed it actually commented, and it was amazing.
Oh,
so
nice.
There you go. It's awesome.
How about that?
So if you're listening, which apparently you are, go check that out. It's really, really good to read. It's got some really good ideas, and just to see the guy commenting like 31 years later was incredible. I was like, I really like, that's the best thing about the Digital Antiquarian. Like, he'll post something about Richard Garriott, I don't know, Lord British, and Lord British comments, and it's like, oh my god, this is incredible. It's the best thing. So,
well,
but
that's good.
But you need 6 spare lifetimes to read it all. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, so there you go, Kintaros. Yeah. Check that out. I really think you'll enjoy it, because it gives a really great insight to what someone's take on the game was. And it's really, really clever for an Apple II game. Really, really, really clever.
Alright.
Well, so there you go.
Alright, so if you want to find us on the digital Twitter sphere, I am at Grindelwald Games. What?
I am at Ben_304, and together we are
at BCT_podcast. What, did you like my digital Twitter sphere, or did you just like it was funny that I was plugging it?
No, I just, you said digital Twitter sphere thing,
or
whatever
you
said.
I did say digital Twitter sphere, that's my new catchphrase.
Imagine if yours on a fax machine and it printed out each tweet, it'd be going so long.
You still may need to make that fax punk game.
Yeah, Maybe
that's what we can do after Shardlight. I'll pitch it to
you. What's it called? Objects. The object game that the Harris guys are making, Rowan and Lee Harris. I actually donated the... I came up with the genre modem punk for their era. Okay. And they're like, yes, that's perfect. We love it. So they've adopted that as their style.
Okay, well, that works.
Yeah, but fax punk is older again.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, good.
Yeah, I think
so,
Punch and I were planning a fax punk game. No, we were.
Okay.
Hi, Punch.
Hello, Punch. I hope you've walked your dogs sufficiently.
Yeah. No, dude, don't bring up the dog. That's sad.
Yeah, let's not think about dogs.
Don't talk about dogs.
All right, all right, let's end this now. Let's leave you with the dulcet tones of M.I.R.I. Akugo. I mangled that. But let's listen to Akugo's lovely theme, and we'll be back at some point in time. Bye.
Take care.
They are the Blue Cup tools. They'll always make the game. And if it seems they can't, they'll just blame David Cage. That's why the AGS forums believe in Francisco Gonzalez and Ben Chandler.